Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Brought to you by the good people at, well, never mind, there aren't any of those things, good people. No, I don't think so. So anyway, we'll do some more of this Spolasky-Dennett thing, and I think it covers so many other subjects, frankly. So many things pops into my mind, just thinking about just being in the later stages of life. You feel so, at least I am experiencing, look, the 40s are bad, the 50s are bad, but the 60s do get creepy because it just, you watch a lot of people your age end up banging into the wall of dying for the first time. They'll survive the first one and the second one and whatever, but they are dropping, and just having that number in your head that every time you roll the dice, your yearly New Year's rolling of the dice, the odds are just not in your favor like they used to be. Yeah, this roll is still okay. It's only 5% chance that you'll be here next year. But, you're figuring, I'm going to be rolling the dice 10 times in the 60s, And it just isn't any fun because you do start to deteriorate, And so you just keep thinking, I do. It occurs to you, oh, is that cancer? Oh, is that, is that my lung cancer showing up finally? Is that my, and you're just, you're very easy to trigger you into, oh, shit, I have to get ready to die now. And it's just such a hassle to have to live your life and then think about, well, what do I have to clean up so I can get the hell out of here without leaving too big a mess? And, part of it's just plain terrifying, too. You don't want some thing to happen where you're not in control anymore, in a hospital, tubes, all that kind of crap. So many things to consider, and they're all negative, and none of it's any fun. So unless you're really busy, and you don't do any thinking, it's no fun getting old. So, if you're counting on your happy retirement, you're going to have to do it hoping that you have a little bit of stupesia, where, you just forget that you're a smart person and instead you become an imbecile and you just kind of, la, la, la yourself through it. Because it really is swords of Damocles, hanging over you and you're just looking for them. And that includes your family, my sisters are getting older, it's all happening all around me. And it's terrifying just to imagine, it's going to be bad. I mean, you have to go first or else it's going to really be bad, So if I chuckle because I just don't know how people haven't talked about, you don't hear any of this realistic recognition of how tragic it's going to be for most of you. I mean, again, most of you aren't going to die before the people you care about. And most of you are going to have to deal with the brutal life inconvenience, let's just call it. The maintenance, time off work, all the stuff that you might have to endure. And then besides that, just the grief, just the sadness of it. I've been through it with a few pets, and that was enough for me, frankly. Don't want to do it anymore. I've had my stomach full, so to speak. And so people selling life, I just can't, these pro-lifers are just so evil because they're just so ignorant and lazy in their thinking, not to appreciate that, the story isn't the happily ever after crap. It is not some sort of romantic perfection. And ironically, you know, I've brought this up before, you know, the stories you thought that were tragic, like Romeo and Juliet, were actually, that's the happily ever after. Because, yeah, it's the only way you can write the story and have it not be just ugly and dismal. I mean, not that that was a great ending. I just mean that, you know, if they'd both gotten killed in a car accident, you know, some kind of, you know, quick end. Because there's no way to end the stories, because there is no happy ever after pills. There's no way to write the story, with any kind of being at all realistic to what will actually be likely, without it just being a fable, a fairy tale. So, and you really can't, you know, I understand why people don't talk about it, because people aren't going to, it's not clickbait exactly. It's not, you know, people, it's not fun to worry, and it's not fun for somebody to give you a thought that you hadn't thought of, you know, like they could say tuberculosis, you know, and then all of a sudden you're going to be looking around going, yeah, that's right, there's more tuberculosis around, you know, start looking at people funny. You know, who wants to live that way? Yeah, nobody. But anyway, So in that context, you know, it just, and these others, like I said, it just seems so apparent. I just had this hard time understanding how any adults in later life, these, you know, Dennett and Spolsky are both my age kind of people, why are they talking this shit? I mean, the shit part of not just being brutally honest and say, you know, on reflection, you know, life is bullshit. I mean, you spend your whole life to acquire some knowledge and some grip of it, some grasp of the truth, and a lot of it does require, you know, quite a bit of educating, because there's a lot of details to the physics of it, and the social bullshit and the crap in your head about how you're a person and you're doing something and it's meaningful. When you figure out the robot part and you start thinking about how reflexive all your actions have been and how controlled you've been by silly little petty angers and other little petty, you know, little avarice things and jealousies and, you know, all that kind of little crap that's fucked with you. And you become, you know, clean of some of the bullshit, and yet you have nothing to live for because, yeah, the rest of the story just ain't going to be a good one. And you're feeling part of it is in the sense that you can't do what you used to be able to do. You can't afford to risk, you know, breaking one of your fragile bones, you know, and all the other stuff. So, you know, you're living this more limited, narrower life, you know, with, just crappier physical assets. So not, you know, just nothing to be selling to anyone. There should be warning signs all over the place, telling people don't drink the water, don't make the babies. Not a good thing to do. Not kind or nice or generous in any way. Just a horrible rape of an innocent. Anyway, so in that context of the raping part, I was thinking about different ways of making these arguments, and you can think about, I have half of a sci-fi movie in my head, and I'm always changing it from, you know, the idea of actual biological organisms to, you know, AI robots kind of thing, and, you know, because it seems obvious that if we were to ever send our intelligence into space, we would send it in the much more durable robot. We wouldn't bother trying to send the biological organism. We'd send the knowledge and wisdom we have acquired into some sort of logic device that would do our ambassadoring for us. We'd send a robot to be our ambassador because it's so difficult to survive the trip and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, and so just the idea of having this conversation with an intelligence greater than our own, who might be more disciplined and organized and might even have a much better crystal ball and might be able to show people what they're really doing. And it's sort of like, you know, you could have a choice about having control over some event like Pompeii. And, you know, the bargain is you could evacuate all the people, but there'd be no more people living there. And, you know, the simple question would be, is it worth evacuating Pompeii at the price that no Pompeian ever can go back? And, you know, it seems infinitely logical to say, of course, the rescue them. So save the future, save the generations that are going to have to go through the true Holocaust that are going to show up, the ones nature is going to impose, you know, whether it be the global warming or the meteor or the asteroid or some other radiation event, you know, that space does. You know, the fact is that the system is going to exact a toll on living organisms eventually. And you're just sentencing them to a horrible, slow death, so to speak. And why? If you can just evacuate, okay, and say, look, if we just don't put them back, we can escape without any more victims, without any more drownings, you know, without any more suffocations, without people having to gnaw their arm off in an earthquake kind of thing. None of that shit has to happen again. You can evacuate all the victims. I mean, the next earthquake in California, it's been a while, you know, so they're kind of due for a big one. And, you know, the last time it was, you know, just horrendous. Bridges falling on people, all kinds of horrible shit, and just can't even imagine the slow, tedious, horrible, crushing death experienced. And if the bargain was you could spare all those people that horrible end, you know, simply by giving up some notion that you need to replace them or repopulate. I mean, some people have sort of done this. You know, they could say Chernobyl is kind of a metaphor. You know, it's very green there now. You know, there are lots of things living, which isn't too good in my opinion, just because, yeah, they all are radioactive and probably, you know, are paying a pretty high price for living in such a hot environment, so to speak. Is it all that big a tragedy? There's no Chernobylians anymore. You know, no, it's not a tragedy. So with that context, I guess, you know, we'll talk some about this free will crap, but it's more about how to talk even between people. And so Daniel Dennett sort of accused this guy of not understanding biology, evolution, and nature, when this is one of those people who sat around for 10 years watching animals be animals. You know, you can't not know something about nature when you're sitting in it all day, okay? So that's such a ridiculous statement. But anyway, so this is his response, okay, to Dennett's mush, you know, about how there is, you know, that somehow free will means intelligent will, and that we are free to acquire intelligent will. Yeah, whatever that means. You know, in spite of, or regardless of, how many distractions we get caught up in. Which is just kind of not fair. It's like everybody has some ability to have my perspective, and somehow they don't do it because they have some hostility towards being smart, when no, they're just, the fact is that you have to always arrange this stuff, and that arrangement takes time, and most people just don't devote much time to organizing their philosophical perspective and recognizing the gaping holes they might have in it, you know, like some kind of bullshit, like they believe in a god or a spirit or, you know, a singularity, whatever the hell that would be. All right, so anyway, leave us continue.
That quote of mine at the end, which was saying it's ridiculous to say that anything good can happen to a machine, you didn't finish the quote, where I then say, nonetheless, at my very core, I think it is a good thing when we are made to have lives with less pain and more happiness.
Yeah, and again, using the word machine without the qualification is like sort of talking about life without the qualification. So again, it doesn't make much sense to even have conversations about reality if words are going to have such vague definition. So the very idea that the paramecium that doesn't have any neurons is, you know, in some people's minds just as alive as I am. And you're saying, well, how could you think that? Because the paramecium doesn't have this organ. And do you really think? I mean, it's such a proven fact by so many ways you can prove the brain is where we are. I mean, whatever consciousness is, the brain is the thing synthesizing it, creating it. And it's just ridiculous to think parameciums are hungry or parameciums are concerned or parameciums are afraid. It's a ridiculous idea. And so this is not the same as that. The thing called a living thing is they're not all equal. They're not all in essence or in substance the same at all. And especially when you start breaking it down to calling a single cell a living thing. And you're just like, well, you know, it's not possible for a single cell, well, a paramecium single cell organism with lots of organs. But I just mean the more rudimentary, like algae or something. Yeah, you want to call this living compared to a rock, but it's not alive compared to a mouse. Not even close, really.
Yes, okay. So a good addendum there. Okay, so where we don't agree. One other thing we agree on. Both of us agree, lest we get caught in the sort of mud with this, we both think punishment and reward are okay to use in an instrumental sense.
Yes. So, I know. So why are you bothering with all this nonsense about thinking that there's some social problem because we are punishing guilty people when they're not guilty of being, it's not their fault, when it doesn't matter whether it's their fault. To have reward and punishment means you have to reward somebody and you have to punish somebody. And you don't have rational reward and punishment, you won't get any utility out of reward and punishment if you punish the innocent as much as you punish the guilty, because it's only fair. Or if you reward the guilty as much as you reward the innocent, because it's only fair. Well, that would be idiotic, because then there is no rational reward and punishment, and therefore there's no use to it. So there's no point in having it or saying you agree to it if you don't understand the guilty have to be punished, whether it's their fault or not. Okay, and this word fault, again, as I tried to point out in the last video, if they can't add two and two, how honest are they? I mean, really. So when you can't figure out that you're not supposed to rape the 5-year-old girl or something, if you can't figure that out, and you're claiming, I didn't know, I couldn't help being an asshole. I didn't know I was being an asshole. Well, yeah, you did know it. You just didn't care, okay, because you have some inflated perception of the value of your gratification and a real deflated, irrationally silly definition of somebody else's welfare. And so you've made a philosophical choice. You've chosen to be a Nazi. And you can't play this game that, oh, they just signed me up, I was drafted. No, you're a fucking Nazi on purpose. Okay, so fuck you. You knew exactly what they were doing. They showed you the blueprint of the concentration camps, and you said, cool. Okay, so fuck you. This idea that we have to have empathy for minds that are cheating the truth so egregiously and pretending, oh, it's just an act. It's like the guy going down the street at 100 miles an hour. You know, these little residential streets with cars on both sides parked, flying down the street at, you know, whatever, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. That dickhead knows what he's fucking doing, and he just is just saying fuck you to everybody. Fuck you, I'm having my fun. Some fun. He obviously doesn't have a dick and doesn't know what to do with it if he had one.
So completely in agreement on that. Okay, so where we're not in agreement. So the first issue is an interesting one in terms of what you describe sort of the evolution of. You point out, say, we do not flay people and burn them at the stake anymore. We have evolved.
Right, and the reason why we think that doesn't work is because they did it badly. Right? I mean, all those great stories about, like, you know, Jane of whatever, with a French girl, what was her name? You know, they burned at the stake for being, pretending to be a man. You know, and you say Galileo imprisoned. You can go through all these lists of how, you know, the whole Inquisition, the whole torturing people for, you know, their political disagreements. I mean, it was used, so lynching, all the fucking lynchings, you know, all the sloppy trials and the sloppy prosecutions where the guy wasn't even guilty, blah, blah, blah. So obviously it's not about how draconian the punishments were. It's about how damn sloppy they were in terms of the judicial process and the unfairnesses. And we're doing it right now. I mean, there's no honor among the thieves that we call judges. I mean, you know, the whole social fabric is dependent on these people having integrity. They're the last guard against corruption, and they are now the first guard in terms of being corrupt, being just political operatives who will fuck people for their own agenda, their own political aspirations. They will incite revenge against you if you attack one of their members. You know, this is the kind of shit we shouldn't, you know, it's just no way the democracy should be this bad that it would vote for such corruption. It's disgusting.
And in some way, I think you're equating that we have evolved to have more free will. Because you're yoking our capacity for self-control to evolution an awful lot. The fact that we don't burn people at the stake anymore.
Yeah, well, look, the fact that we can know better, right? So there's nothing that's preventing a lion from knowing better, you know, about, you know, slowly killing its prey, and how horrible it is to let somebody die so slowly and brutally, except him going to school and acquiring the knowledge. And so he can't acquire language, and without language he really can't do this conceptual thinking. And so there's a real limitation, a real prevention from his will being constructed out of inhibitions about the natural impulse. So yeah, we have impulses to do all kinds of things, and we control all of them all the time. So we don't sneeze, you know, cover our mouths. We do all kinds of things to interrupt nature and do it more civilized. And there's nothing miraculous about that existing. And the only reason why we have more of that learned behavior, it's like the chimpanzees pulling the termites out with the stick. It's not instinctive. It's something they have to be taught. A particular tribe has to have the knowledge, and they have to teach their young the knowledge. So we're in the same boat. We have to be taught to be decent, because it's not the natural impulse. The natural impulse is to think your mother and father are more important than somebody else's mother and father. The natural instinct is to think your kids are more important than somebody else's kids. Those are really negative things. That, you know, again, that you know, I could go on, and there's so few people that can even catch that so easy to understand built-in innate bias that is so socially destructive. This whole idea that people can't generate any true or any honest empathy for children as a category. And they can't separate themselves from some huge, gigantic bias saying somehow I have to make sure mine come first, that they get in the good lines and they don't get in the bad lines. You know, they don't get in the cancer line. They don't get into the exposed to the molester line. They don't get into the lines all the other kids can get into, and it's okay.
More, I think, shows exactly the opposite, which is over and over throughout history, we have learned, someone is actually not responsible for this. Somebody does not control the weather and thus deserves to be burned at the stake.
Right, so these are obviously dumb mistakes of the past and they have nothing to do with the present. Nobody's being burned at the stake for any of these stupid reasons. No one's being thrown into, you know, we're not throwing virgins into volcanoes anymore. We're not feeding people to sharks. We're not doing any of this retarded crap. And in, I'd say, pretty certain almost every circumstance possible, we're preventing ourselves from making the mistake by being very, very careful about executing anybody for a crime. And they have to be, not only does the crime have to be a fact that they committed it, but it has to be this, you know, especially egregious. And, you know, there really aren't any sad accidents.
Stake is a witch. Ah, somebody has an epileptic seizure, not because they're sleeping with Satan. Ah, somebody has...
Somebody doesn't molest a kid, okay, like you get a seizure, okay? It's not the same thing. We're not making a mistake, okay, by saying that needs to be punished. So let's not pretend this is complicated. It's not their fault that they, you know, if I can use the word pervert, they're a pervert. Okay, and they have inappropriate sexual function. That's not their fault, right? Well, I mean, we all know that our, you know, how we turned out sexually was all kind of a very delicate little voyage we had to go through to figure out what the fuck we were interested in and to find some consistent notion of what we're interested in, right? Because it, for me anyway, it kept morphing, you know, from age, you know, 8 to, 17. It was, you know, floating around, and you know, in terms of an identity, you know, even that denial that people can't even get that there's nobody born something, you know, they're helped, they're in every way pushed into a certain costume that they're going to end up wearing the rest of their life. And these are huge, gigantic decisions and blah 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 and all that kind of stuff, huge implications. And but we know all that psychology is written, you know, by these events that happen, these interactions you have in the world. And yeah, it's not people's fault, but it doesn't change the fact that the whole point is it has to be deterred. It has to be prevented if possible. And if, you know, turning up the deterrent stove will get the job done, then do it.
Trouble learning to read because they have dyslexia and we know the neuroanatomy of it rather than they're lazy and unmotivated.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, if he's going to make this appeal, then he should make the appeal with some sort of poster child. So who's the poster child for this wrongly punished innocent person? You know, not guilty by reason of whatever, stupidity or bad luck or whatever the rationale is. I mean, who's the poster child for this? What's the big victim that I can, the go-to victim of the poor person abused by our punishment system that wasn't an abuse because of a, you know, some other political corruption, one of these bad judges? Show me the victim.
At each one of these steps where we have subtracted out responsibility, where we have viewed the world as having less free will, it's become a much nicer place to live in. Now, it's a second.
So I don't even understand what he's saying there. I just don't. I'm sorry. You're saying that a community of people who don't think they have free will somehow behave better? I don't think there's any evidence of that. So. Smart people, smart is a good thing. So I guess if you're going to argue that, well, most of the people who know they don't have free will aren't imbeciles. Well, yeah. So yeah, they're more civilized. I mean, the more intelligent you are, the less likely you're going to be a psycho killer. I think that's just sort of a not a dead straight line, but a mostly straight line. And, you know, people who are smart and psychotic, it's usually because they really do have a pathology. You know, they truly are schizophrenic, Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing. They have a real personality disorder that's, you know, deeply deranged in terms of their perspective and viewing the other inhabitants of Earth.
Second point, sort of you're alluding, Dan, to what I think is another incredibly, like, tempting, seductive way to, in which to get into trouble, which is to make this false dichotomy. Yes, most people will admit we have no control over some of the attributes that we were given, that we were gifted with, that we were cursed with, and so on. Some of us are tall. Some of us have perfect pitch. Some of us have good memory spans.
But really, can realistically any of us make the excuse, I just couldn't get that 2+2 concept? You know, I'm just saying we're basically, our brains work to be rational. And look, if somebody can figure out how to obey the rules of the road, don't let them come to me and say, I couldn't figure out how to obey the rules of rape and murder. I mean, too ridiculous.
For digits, some of us, this or that, and, you know, we were given these traits. Yeah. Most people will now believe, rather than being Calvinists, that this was outside our realm of control. What people then do is this, like, leapfrog over this graph.
Yeah, that's what, you, in my perception, you're doing. It's just jumping over this whole idea that first you're lamenting a tragedy that I don't think exists, that is the insane miscarriages of justice that are taking place within the violent crime, let's just say, and within these certain areas where there's some huge misjustice. And all the misjustice seems to be in the sense that the victims are being underrepresented. They're being underprotected because, yeah, I mean, people can recklessly own dogs. The dogs go out and kill somebody, eat them, right, on the street. And, you know, they get a traffic ticket. You know, it's like, is that all that person's pain and suffering is worth? Is that kind of response from the civilization to say, well, they couldn't help, you know, buying real chains to chain up their dogs? You know, they shopped at Walmart. You know, fuck that. Fuck this. Fuck making excuses, especially for the most heinous of crimes that are in most violation of 2+2. I mean, there's just no point in making excuses for behavior that bad.
And canyon of a false dichotomy into, but where we have free will is what we do with those attributes. Do we show tenacity? Do we show gumption and backbone when the going gets tough? Do the tough get going? Do we show self-control? Or conversely, are we privileged and gifted and we squander it away with self-indulgence?
Yeah, so that's a whole different subject, you know, maximizing our potential and recognizing what game we're actually playing. So what potential are we trying to release or gain access to? You know, what can you do with this electricity that you have? You know, are you going to power the cure for malaria, or are you going to squander it on Twinkies, you know, and bonbons and butterflies? You know, are you going to do something real with your existence in the sense of recognizing the real value landscape and how you actually score points, you know, how you score actual positive credit points in terms of doing the right and smart thing? The right and smart thing should always be at least a label that's in front of you, you know, like a stop sign. This is the start sign, or this is the go sign, the positive thing, okay, that you might not want to do, but you should at least be obligated to step over it, okay, to actually say, okay, I'm not willing to do right and smart because I'm too lazy. Right, a little extra interjection. So I remember when in my mid-20s, had to start dealing with the fact that I was blighted by a lot of psychology baggage that I couldn't get through, I couldn't go up in elevators, couldn't do this, all these limitations about, this anxiety disorder, and the phobia thing. So I read a lot of psychology books looking for an answer. And the word actualization, I remember reading that in the context of, yes, I'd heard the word before, but it just was a word. And this was the first time I really thought about the word, okay, and this fact that I was trying to find a way to actualize my existence. And I had all these obstacles, these inhibitions. It's like you're a race car and you can race, but you don't have gasoline. Some stupid thing is in the way, like you're missing a tire. So, yeah, you can't race. So I was trying to find that missing tire, and that was the disappointing part. As you read all this psychology stuff, and it became clearer and clearer that I'm sane and the world is crazy. So it just became clear that no one's appreciating any of this. They're not properly risk averse. They're sloppy and reckless, and that seemed the obvious answer, that I wasn't sloppy and reckless. They were. They weren't thinking about what they're doing, and I was thinking about what I was doing. I wasn't overthinking. I was doing the appropriate amount of thinking, and saying, no, that's not worth it. No, that's not worth it. That's just psychological bullshit. Why should I, endure 5 years of effort to be this, that, and this, and accomplish something that's trivial and unimportant? It just became clear that, unfortunately, that I couldn't find this tragedy, the one tragedy. I couldn't find some big event to blame it all on, that I was a Holocaust victim or I had some sort of survivor's disorder. So I was just stuck with the realization that, no, I just had a normalish kind of life. And I just happened to be thinking about it as it was happening. And I rationally responded to the obvious risk that was made apparent. And my brain was making the rational choice to say, it's not worth it. And clearly, the bullshit isn't. All the crap people think is going to make them happy, it doesn't make them happy. It doesn't work. And once you learn that the Lamborghini's never going to give you, enough fun to justify the price you paid, the amount of waste, that it represents. You could have done so much more for so many more in terms of allocating those resources.
Yes. The seduction is that things like, how good your memory span is, what type of receptor you have for this neurotransmitter relevant to memory, that stuff you were getting.
So this is the part where he's not talking about the defect of not having gas or not having a tire. It's more like this, there's a little bit of a knock in one of the cylinders, or there's a little, one of the wires is a little bit frayed. Some little crap that we all have to overcome. I mean, we all have some sort of little defect. Your knee joints are too big, or your ankle joints are too small, or all of this little bullshit. And talking about brains with these little subtle, I'm sure I could be diagnosed as somebody has too much of some sort of awareness hormone. That I was always a nervous type, whatever you want to, you want to blame that on some sort of dopamine or bullshit chemical shit. And, but it's, to sit there and use these as, they're still not enough to make excuses for rape and murder.
Given, but what do you do with it? More gumption, your control or lack thereof, that's made of fairy dust. That's magical stuff. That's a completely different category. And what we see is self-control is as biological of a trait as is your eye color.
So I don't buy that. I would definitely say though that those control mechanisms, at least in the sense of having the inhibition thoughts, is cultural. All right, it really just depends on how much, you know, you could sit there and, you know, raise a kid and keep telling the kid how great they are and how great they are and how great they are, and they'll grow up and have no character and be useless pieces of shit. So obviously you have to build this idea of character in a human being by them being humiliated, them feeling the risk and having to have the courage to, you know, move past all of that. And those kind of lessons have to be learned. You're going to be stuck with a human that's going to be pretty much a bag of shit. So, yes, yeah, clearly, yes, people can be limited and restricted, but does that create enough justification for not being able to add 2 + 2? But, you know, on the street, you can, you know, on the highway, you can add 4 + 4. You know, but now over here on the ethical side, you can only add 2 + 2. Now, bullshit.
Is your capacity to play the piano, as is your height. It's a different kind of biology. For my money, it's a hell of a lot more interesting biology, but it's just as biological. And what it's embedded in is a squishy, real, biologically yucky part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex. You develop a good prefrontal cortex, you are going to be good at showing self-control.
I have a big, giant forehead. I got too much control. Too much, you know, the voices in my head are louder than the voices in other people's heads, you could say, maybe, because of that. And so I'm constantly shouted down out of my existence by all these catchphrases that they can throw at me to say, you're not worth the extra piece of cake, or you're not, you know, you haven't earned it, or you didn't do it. And the counter story, the counterbalance, that is your intelligence. I don't know if there's much value in trying to parse through how much of your identity is the life experience and how much is the native brain state. Obviously, you can have a combination thing where you're made more susceptible, you're more of a nervous type. Let's just say, use that word. There's got to be a better phrase than that. And you have bad experiences, and those two, you know, sentence you to being a paranoid, inhibited, and unhappy.
As an adult, you will be better at doing the hard thing when it's the right thing to do. Are we responsible for the sort of prefrontal cortices we have? Not a chance. Here's one example that should stop people right in their tracks, that should have people out.
So again, I would argue that, of course, you are, if you can pass the 6 + 6 test and the 4 + 4 test, and maybe even the 10 + 10 test, and then you fail the 2 + 2 test. Come on, bullshit.
You know, yelling at the barricades and singing like revolutionary songs from Les Mis, by the time a child is 5 years old, the socioeconomic status of their parents is already a predictor of the thickness of their prefrontal cortex and its metabolic rate. And big surprise, it goes in the direction of, if you...
So I hate when they do this, just because these are tiny statistical advantages. You're talking about 87% versus 82% or something. So it's a tiny little change in outcomes, not a dramatic change in outcomes. So this is like the bell curve kind of arguments. This is not very... It's not very well presented science, because it gives this fake impression that there's some guarantees out there that you can just, you know, spoon put this much medicine in the glass and the kid will be cured of being an asshole. And none of that's true. And the effects are often side effects. So it's like, you know, something that might be poisonous will prevent you getting some other disease. Like you could stop Parkinson's disease. I'm just making this part up. You know, by ingesting a certain amount of arsenic. And, you know, so you get the negative plus the positive, you know, it ends up being a net who knows what. But it's not that simple, in my opinion. That, I mean, it seems kind of obviously, if you raise a kid to do some simple task all day, like you put him in a factory and he's just doing this all day, or you have raise a kid to read books, that obviously I think their brain is going to be different, okay? The brain's going to react to suit what they're doing. And obviously if their imagination isn't being stimulated, then that part of their brain isn't going to grow.
Very imprudently intended and chose to be born into a family in poverty, you're going to have a screwed up prefrontal cortex on the average by the time you're 5 years old. Bad luck.
So again, I just don't think he can prove any correlations that are that dramatic. We're talking about little tiny statistical differences between the kid who, you know, raised by the millionaire versus the kid raised by the poor people. These are tiny physical differences, you know, created by bad diet or created by, let's say, a noisy environment. You know, like, let's say you did. You raised a kid and you had one of those elevated trains going by the window, and so you had this constant interrupting, very loud noises. I would imagine a brain would develop, you know, in some kind of broken manner, because it could never keep a train of thought going because of the train. And, you know, those are really, you know, it's a real circumstance. I mean, there are so many simple ways, you know, just simple. Let's say you gave two kids books and the poor kid had to read paperbacks that were small type. And the rich kid read the same books, but they were the nice hardcovers and big text. And so the poor kid ends up straining his eyes and needing glasses. Instead of getting real glasses, you know, they just get the dime store, dollar, you know, stored glasses. And, you know, the kid ends up getting nauseous every time he reads. And, you know, these are going to be different fates. You know, they're going to have a different experience. It's like having a fun piano teacher, you know, versus somebody who hits you with a bamboo stick. You know, I shouldn't use that example just because sometimes you're better off with somebody who isn't trivial, you know, as a teacher, because it gets you where you got to go faster. And sometimes you need that speed because you have to get it done before you start growing out of the process of learning. You know, especially with kids, you got to, you know, especially now in the competitive environment anyway, it's almost like, you know, if they haven't acquired the skill by the time they're 11, it's over, you know, which is just kind of tragic.
Evens out over time. Gumption is not made of biology. This is the biology which every step along afterward is the biology and interactions with environment of why at virtually every juncture.
All right, so I just keep reiterating that we're not talking about brain surgery. And yes, it'd be really nice to make it all fair and make it so just as many poor people become brain surgeons as wealthy people and all that kind of stuff, or privileged children versus non-privileged children. But we're not really not talking about that when we're talking about free will and its application, anything like reward and punishment. We're really just talking about calculators that can't do 2 + 2. So we're talking about catastrophic failures in functionality, not, you know, gee, I never learned how to play the violin. I wish I had, okay, when they were giving out instruments, somehow I ended up with a trumpet. I don't know how the fuck I ended up with a trumpet, but I did. Maybe I was last in line. I was not that interested, so whatever was left over, I just grabbed. But yeah, bad, just not a pretty instrument. Just loud, and I'm not. It's just kind of funny because it's so opposite my personality. When I was a kid, I was so introverted and receding, and here I was trying to learn how to play an instrument that was loud and obnoxious. Just it was kind of ironic. So yes, it would have been much better. Who knows? I would have been a whole different in Mendham if I had played the violin. Just a fact. I might have a bow in my hair now, but whatever. I would have been a different person.
This person is going to make the wrong decision and go in the wrong direction, and it has as little to do with choice and free will as your eye color does. I think the final point I want to make with that is running through that is a notion.
So again, I'm just going to reiterate that yes, all of these subtle differences are true, and we would be different people. You would have a different hairstyle. You might be wearing glasses now. You might have a different kind of jacket on. All kinds of things would change. But the 2 plus 2 thing, come on, we're talking about rape and murder. We're not talking about, whether you'd have a beard or you wouldn't have a beard.
Again, the gumption angle is a source of pulling out judgment and responsibility, which I think is simply antithetical to where the science is. If I can have a quote of yours, Dan, quote, "A good runner who starts at the back of the pack, if he is really good enough to deserve winning, will probably have plenty of opportunity to overcome the initial disadvantage." In other words, if he fails to show sufficient gumption to make up for that deficit, he doesn't deserve to win.
Oh well, again, and but this is all such, talking about all the luck, that the happenstance of not spraining your ankle, not getting knee inflammation, all the little bullshit that stops the greatest in the world. And right now, there's people who would have been the greatest in the world at something, and their failure wasn't their fault. It was just some mechanical failure, like they were born a dwarf, or something stupid that just got in the way. They just happen to be the best, basketball shooter, that is throwing a ball, getting it in the hoop at the highest percentage, but they're only 5 feet tall, so they don't stand a chance. Sort of bullshit like that. So, I mean, yeah, the world is incredibly unfair, and it's just another reason to be really down on any kind of idea that we want to keep doing this to kids. We want to keep forcing them into this competitive environment where deserve isn't going to have a hell of a lot to do with it. It's going to have something to do with it. Okay, you're not going to become a doctor because you didn't spend the extra time and you didn't eat, you didn't waste your time on all this frivolous fun stuff. You didn't go jet skiing and do this and do that and have a bunch of mountain climbing interests and that interest and all these other interests. You had to narrow your focus. You had to, and you had to spend a lot of time doing tediously unpleasant acquisition of knowledge, learning languages, all that kind of crap. Just a fact. And there's no reason to say, okay, there's a certain deserve component built into that fact, but it's still not fair, okay? Because there's some people who do that and then they drop dead when they're, 25 years old. So I mean, it's just so ugly. As a blueprint for anything like a good game. This is not a good game, and people who would sentence a child to play it are cruel and stupid and ignorant and mean and nasty and sinister and disgusting. They have a rotten mind.
It is a moral judgment that he was not able to overcome his initial bad luck because control is made out of magic. Control is something that is not made out of biology. And I obviously strongly disagree with that. I think the very last.
Okay, so instead of saying magic, you could have said God. God gave us a better will, and somehow we have to violate it to be bad people. which every reasonable or reasonably intelligent person should be able to say, okay, I know that's not the right answer. And that, yes, we're not innately gifted with an unbiased, fair mind, that we have to acquire the skills of being fair by understanding our unfairnesses, our innate unfairnesses. The fact is, you sexually desire certain women of a certain shape. It's not the women who aren't that shape's fault, that they don't deserve your admiration and your desire and your love. Okay, you know, clearly. And that, you know, much of our innate, what we value or like or enjoy, hasn't earned our appreciation. Again, we don't, our parents don't really earn our love. Your siblings don't really earn it. They don't have to earn it. Let's just put it that way. And we're going to have those biases. And the key is to understand them and say, I don't vote for that. I don't vote for some idea that because they're my children, I should be able to help cheat them in the game of life. That I should be able to run the races, as many of the races as I can for them, so they don't have to do it themselves and risk their welfare. You know, how else to say it? I mean, we should just know those cheats are exactly that, cheats. That we're cheaters by nature, and our intelligence, it gives us the capacity to recognize we're cheating and to try to do something about it, to try to create the fairness that the world doesn't make. And such.
Point, Dan, is there's another realm in which I think you've been seduced into a great embrace of free will, which is you've got a lot more faith in intuition than I think is justified. For example, you have the really interesting two-stage model.
Intuition is what I'm just talking. We don't have, our intuitions are garbage. You know, that we're innately have, because they're pretty much just selfish and bigoted and not rationally focused. They're focused on trivial and irrelevant aspects, kind of like watching a paramecium, okay? And somebody like you could be a really, you know, kind of a retarded human like a Pyrrho, and you could actually think because its mechanical systems are requiring it to reflexively jerk, that somehow all of that is intentional, and that somehow the little organism is conscious, when no, it's wiggling like a knee jerk. It's completely just a mechanical response to an impulse. It's, you know, you hit it and the thing bends, and then it, you know, reflexively retracts, and there's no consciousness involved. There's no intent involved. There's no will involved. There's no desire involved. It's just a mechanical process. So our intuition is to fall for that superficial, you know, it's doing antics, okay, therefore it's doing them on purpose and it's doing them consciously, when no, its antics are just a mechanical script, like a player piano. Well, player piano is a good example, right? You can watch a player piano and it's like you almost can see the invisible man playing the piano. You can, your brain, you know, look at that piano go. You know, it's like you're rooting for the piano or something. You know, it doesn't seem like just a machine. It does seem like something more. And that's our intuition. And it's stupid. It's ignorant. It's dumb. It's retarded. It's, you know, it's of diminished capacity. It's not really a good thing. And we have to overcome it, as the famous line goes, nature is here, is to be, what's the, you know, I forgot the line from the, whatever, the boat ride movie. Nature is for us to overcome Mr. Walnut or something, whatever the fuck it is. But anyway, yeah, I mean, that's the biggest goal, is to overcome our sloppy and crude native programming and become civilized and intelligent. Well, intelligent and then civilized.
decision making, which, let's not get into it, but I disagree with, blah, blah, big surprise. But you say one of its strengths is it aligns with our intuitions. Quote, that model, quote, provides some account of our important intuition that we are the authors of our moral decisions. In other words, your model for why there's some free will is more acceptable because it fits with...
Again, it doesn't make any sense. And we design ourselves, which is just, that's what he's saying. And of course we don't. The design has entirely been written by all of these circumstances. And if all of those circumstances, the combination, you know, what the ingredients thrown into the bowl were, and you just can't get around it, that I would be a different person if I grew up, you know, 20 miles away from where I grew up, or, you know, moved to a different place, or did some, it'd all be a different combination of events. And yes, some things might have been decided by the time I was 3 years old. Some things might have been decided by the time I was five. Some things might have been decided by the time I was seven. But there's so much room in there for all kinds of compensations. You know, where you have too little salt, but you added a bunch of whatever. I can't remember the name of MSG, you know. So instead of salt, you got MSG. And so with MSG, it's almost like salt. Blah, 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 blah. You have the replacements that compensate for what you were missing. But you just can't deny it's just a mixture of ingredients. I don't think you can do that reasonably. I don't think you can be doing something called logic and deny that we are a byproduct of the experiential ingredients that are our life.
With our intuition that we have free will, and I think my last point here that I want to make is intuition is a really lousy guide for
and just the idea again that there's a free will. So to say that I'm intuitionally brilliant would be just such a stupid thing to say. You know, that I always knew the right thing to do, and I always knew the right thing to want, and I always knew, you know, that I even knew how to want correctly is just silly.
Thinking about how the world works. Let me give you an example. I will bet, Dan, if you and I were sitting in a cafe 400 years ago, we were the same people and just as reflective, and we would have like given money to NPR if it existed at the time and all of that. We would have been the same reasonable people. It would have been probably intuitively obvious to us that certain people are meant to be slaves. In fact, they're so incapable of taking care of themselves, it's a blessing to enslave them.
Okay, so that's a terrible thing to argue, that you could retain your intelligence, your current intelligence, and find any excuse, even if it were true, okay, that there were diminished capacity people on Earth, even if it were true, you don't enslave them. You have pity on them. You almost try to help. You don't put retarded people in retard camps and treat them badly. You don't force them into, you know, road crews and make them dig ditches. I mean, it's just pathetic that he would sit there and say there's some possibility that he could rationally find an excuse to impose harm on other feeling creatures. You know, even that, even if they were animals, even saying that you're going to enslave the horse and enslave the cow to your agenda, you're way above that now. To sit there and say that he would have an intelligent conversation with the same mindset he has now in, you know, the 1700s or something and start rationalizing slavery is just pathetic of him. I mean, obviously that was a huge religious and there's other reasons people were able to maintain those silly notions. And they don't have anything to do with being smart, and they have everything to do with huge, gigantic deficits in their understanding. They were essentially flat ethicists. They were flat earthers, okay? They really hadn't figured out what kind of planet they lived on, and the fact that they had huge responsibility for what happened on this planet to every feeling thing. So, oh, that was just terrible, frankly.
Feed them and clothe them. And that's not intuitively obvious to us anymore. It's not intuitively obvious that it's okay to have four-year-olds work in factories. But in the past, it would have seemed intuitively obvious to us as well. It's
no. So what? Not so again. It's huge exaggeration. I don't remember the four-year-old work camps, but nine-year-olds, yeah. So you know, they'd send them out in the coal mines and whatnot. There might have been. You know, I can't even see that there were really four-year-olds even picking coals on this, you know, the slag piles. But whatever. It's just, you know, I mean, this is just such. It's so wrong for him. He's arguing against his own argument in the sense that what has made us civilized is intelligence. And the fact is there was a huge deficit in intelligence 200 years ago or 400 years ago or 800 years ago. In the sense they hadn't acquired enough intelligence to know that, this is all just about ancestors. Look, when the Europeans came to North America, they didn't know the Indians are their genetic brothers, you know, in the sense that it's only 20,000 years of separation. So they were the same people, and they got separated, okay, by 20,000 years, okay? They moved to America kind of thing. But they have the same name, okay? They're, you know, they come over there, and they didn't know that, oh, these are really our ancestors. I mean, these are our relatives. And that perception that these are our relatives would have changed everything. So that one piece of knowledge that, you know, if there was a tattoo or some mark, like if we were star-bellied sneetches, and we went over there and we found that, yeah, they're a little darker color, their feet are bigger, and some other stupid thing. They got thicker eyebrows. But they have the star belly. All right, we would have then had a whole different relationship, is we would have recognized that all we're really fighting is two cultures. We're not fighting anything more than just a cultural difference. And it's, you know, we should be able to knit the family back together. So, you know, bad on you, Spolesk. This was a bad ending to your semi-not-so-bad response.
No longer intuitively obvious that a kid who has a cortical malformation and as a result reverses looped letters and has trouble learning to read because of their dyslexia, it's no longer intuitively obvious to us that they're lazy and unmotivated.
Right, and that's, but those are the kind of deficits, frankly, that I don't know, if I put all the people that have those kind of deficits in a room, I'm not sure at all they're going to be malfunctional. That in some ways they're probably going to be better off for it, and it's as strange as that sounds, because in some ways they did have to overcome, they did have to fight for their knowledge, and they had maybe a great deal more appreciation for the acquisition of it because it was so hard to find. You know, maybe if the diamonds are just laying on the surface and you're just picking them up, you're not going to, you know, it's not the same adventure as if you have to spend a year struggling and sifting and working to find the one little diamond. So in some ways, I'd say some minor deficits like that do build positive character, generally speaking. I just say generally speaking.
But 40, 50 years ago, I suspect both of us would have found it obvious that this is a kid who just really isn't paying attention, isn't motivated. Over and over and over, our intuitions have proven wrong. Over and over.
And you could say why, and you'd say not a no good role model. His big brother's an asshole. His father's an asshole. You know, there's lots of things to pick to say, well, you know, he's poorly motivated because he's not being the people who are doing that he's going to mimic are bad poster childs for being a person. And so he's learning how not to be a good person by watching people do it badly.
And we realize our intuitions are a very poor litmus test, and we recognize we are intuitively punishing and rewarding and judging and all of that for things people had no control over, over and over.
So I don't see any of what he's talking about. I'm saying there's bad, lots of broken in the justice system and lots of chicanery and lots of other bullshit. But the basic idea that you have to punish violent crime and, you know, all this kind of stuff is solid. There's just nothing wrong with that idea. And as a social construct, and yes, if we can reward people for gaining the good habit of being a good citizen, that is, you pay them not to violate the rules of being a good citizen, I'm all for that too. But the fact is, you can't, it would be foolish to leave the power of the whip unutilized, because rewards are expensive and you just can't provide enough of them.
We recognize that these intuitions, in fact, are based on responsibility, which is simply not there. The world becomes a better place. It really is a very good thing that we figured out witches don't control the weather.
So again, just silly. These are silly comparisons. We're not burning any witches. We're not doing any of that shit. So it's not a real threat to our civilization. And what we are doing is exactly the opposite, which is we're placating a bunch of really bad behavior. And we're telling people that all you do is, we're saying all kinds of dysfunction now. Just we'll put a little pretty label on it. You're on the spectrum. You're the, you know, some sort of bullshit. And making excuses for bad behavior. And that's really not a good idea.
And we figured out that rotten, psychoanalytically poisonous mothers don't cause schizophrenia. And that people with a certain variant of a gene for the left...
I really don't think that's even true. So, I mean, you know, he should... You know, he knows more than I do on this subject. But I don't think that's true. I think a psycho can make you psycho. So I don't think that's any... I don't think a schizophrenic mother has any trouble at all ending up making their child just as erratic and dysfunctional because of all the phantoms and the stories and the nonsense and the distractions. And it just becomes... They become... Their brain gets into the same habit of switching gears and almost like they're in a different play every 3 hours. They just change the play that they're putting on, you know, the performance art. And I think that could drive a kid psycho. I don't think you're born schizophrenic.
And receptor have trouble having their brain satiate rather than them just hating themselves and thus eating themselves into obesity. At every one of these steps, our initial intuitions have proven very, very suspect and wrong. And at each step, when we actually learn...
So again, correlation, cause, effects, these are all, like I said, you're talking about, you know, okay, it makes you 10% more likely. It makes you 7.8% more likely. This is not the controlling factor. So I just don't like that he's implying that these physical problems are, totally deciding, because they really aren't.
What's going on, we subtract responsibility out of it, and not only doesn't the societal roof fall in, it becomes a much better place to live in.
I don't even understand what the fuck he's talking about. I mean, what's the example of the better place to live in? Where is the evidence that this idea that somehow forgiving the excuse makers, you know, the Twinkie defense... all of the bullshit that goes on, all of this, you know, I couldn't help myself nonsense. How does that make civilization better? I don't think it does any. I don't think it comes even a tiny bit close.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so maybe we'll leave it there. And maybe, you know, unless I get distracted by some other thing that occurs, maybe we'll do one more round of them interacting. I think then it gets another 10 minutes and then they do a little back and forth, I guess. But, you know, it's always just, you know, it's intelligent conversation, you'd argue. So it's of some value as fodder for me to react to it. So there's some value in that. I don't know why this camera... Yeah, it is a little crooked, isn't it? Crooked. Anyway, that's better. Yeah, so at least for the end of the video, I'm straighter. But little things like that, see, I could make excuses. I say, well, you know, it's just a proven fact that, you know, a little bit of defect in the image makes it more memorable, that you'll completely ignore the images that are perfect, and, and your brain will really trigger on the ones that have an imperfection. So you always want to have some kind of piece of hair sticking up funny, some kind of thing, because, yeah, that'll make other people's brains work better. But anyway, that's all bullshit. Just made all that shit up. All right, anyway, so till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. So maybe we'll end with this also. So this has been a DoNotGod.com video presentation. Okay, and thank you for listening. Appreciate it. You reached all the way here to the end. You gave me my shot to say some things, and I said them. And I hope you'll consider them. And I plead with you, okay, to always be mindful that really we're sitting here saying, we're having a conversation, we're thinking about whether or not we're going to save the people of Pompeii, or whether we're just going to say, nah, just let them be tortured over and over again. Yeah, that's the stakes. And it's these conversations, it's all riding on how these conversations go. So, till the next time and such, and so forth, and whatnot.